is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Welcome to another edition of Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1, The One, and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors, of course, is proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. I'm Dave Vesladol, and as always, alongside me is our co-host, Andy Beham.
Hey, Dave, how are we doing today?
Been busy. Oh, yes.
You're all ready for the upcoming Jesse James days?
I think so. All right. trying to be ready.
Trying to find a parking spot today. It reminds me that I'm jealous of those families that sometimes just pack up and get out of town for the weekend.
Maybe it's not a bad idea. Hey, I went down to Almonds to the Shooter Roundup. I don't know if you've been down there.
You know, yeah.
Where all the different outdoor manufacturers are. Had a chance to shoot me a Tommy gun.
Yeah, how'd you like that?
Those are difficult to shoot.
Yeah, I bet.
It's surprising.
Spray it all over the place?
Yeah. They had a lot of Civil War reenactors there, and I was in line to shoot a Gatling gun, and it broke down on me.
Oh, no. So, that would have been the one I was looking forward to.
I didn't get to do that, but I did get to see him shoot cannons.
Nice.
But it was a lot of fun. It's always a good time to get
there. Yeah, had good weather down there for you?
Yeah, actually they did. And then one of the other things I got to talk about is, I don't know if you've ever done this with your dog, when Northfield opens up their swimming pool at the end of the year for the dogs.
Yep.
I brought mine down there, and it's just this big dog party.
Oh, yeah.
There's 40 dogs played in the water.
I'd hate to be in charge of cleaning the filters after that weekend.
Yeah, exactly. But, of course, my dog, Oli, absolutely loves water.
Oh, yeah.
So he was out there always swimming in the middle trying to get all the other dogs to come out and play.
But yeah.
It's just hilarious to sit back and watch that.
Oh, definitely. But it's a fun time.
Yeah. Hats off to Northfield for doing that.
We didn't get to make it this year, but, yeah, we've done it in the years past, and it's fun.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yeah, good time. Didn't you get out and do something fun and exciting?
Yeah, we got our boat out, I'm assuming, for the last time for the year.
Oh, yeah. It's getting to be that.
We got Jesse James Days coming up next weekend.
Yep.
The weekend after, we're going camping with the family, and that Monday I have hernia surgery, so don't think I'll be hauling the boat in and out of the water for those fall trips.
If you want to just leave it in the water for me,
you'd make sure that the gasket's rotated.
Yeah, you don't want that summer gas left in it.
No.
I'd be more than happy to
take it. I appreciate that. Yeah, it was a beautiful day. We went down to Lake Pepin. It started out a little cold. The sun broke the clouds away, and yeah, had a wonderful day.
So. Oh, good. Well, today, Andy, we've got Gary Wagenbach. He's the president of the Valley Girl Preservation Society. This is going to be a fun program for me because Valley Girl churches, if you haven't been out to see them, spend any time out there, it is a must-do on your list. And that area has been near and dear to my family for a long, long time. But Gary, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, let's start out. Give us a little bit of background. What is the Valley Grove Preservation Society, and a little bit of background on the Valley Grove churches, where they're located at, and what are you trying to do out there?
Okay, sure. Well, the Valley Grove Preservation Society is a nonprofit, started in the later 1970s into the 1980s, and that cares for the two historic churches that are at the site. Stone church from the new wood church, I say new, 1894, those two churches, plus the surrounding land. So we, the 12-member board, coordinate the care of the buildings plus the surrounding land, and we have a close collaboration with the Cemetery Association, the president of which is Ken Vesladol.
Yeah, I happen to know that
familiar sounding name, perhaps.
When I was talking to Ken about this, he said, "Well, Gary's a guy you got to talk to if you want to talk about the walking trails and what all the work that went into that stuff out there." So, and that's a lot of what we want to cover. But give us just a little bit more of the history of the churches. Why are they important? Why are they significant?
Well,
Why should people go out there and take a look at them?
I'd be happy to do that. I'm very passionate about the site and its value to the community and me personally and my family and friends of mine and people in the neighborhood. And here's what I think is interesting. the historic places location where the two churches are located at, I guess the address is 1999 150th Street, if you need your GPS to find it. But check our website, and we'll tell you about that later. Go out for a visit, and you'll see the two stone churches. And the early settlers from the 1850s chose this site for the two buildings. Now, I'll tell you a little bit more, as much as you want to know about the why, how they came to be on this location. But what's interesting historically, I think, and this is what I tell my high school students, that not mine personally, but I sometimes teach groups that come out or do field tours for groups like Arcadia students from Northfield last spring. And I would say something like, this, the settlement, the Norwegian settlers started living in the area in the 1850s after an infamous, some would say famous, treaty, 1851, the Treaty of Traverse des Sioux, when the Louisiana Territory was opened up for settlement, this corner of the area. And Norwegian settlers came in fairly quickly and through the 1850s and 1860s and quickly populated the area. Beautiful farmland was available in the rolling hills around the Nearstrand and south of there. And the early Norwegian settlers were very had a very religious orientation and were quickly having worship services in their houses, in their homes. And the Lutheran Church sent early ministers to help them out, and very soon there was the thought to build something.
Sure.
It ended up being a stone church. And rumor has it that the stone was used, which was quarried locally, because it was available material, but also wood is much more fragile, and the Civil War was in the process of happening in the early 1860s. And so then a more... some would say fortified building was built, just in case, perhaps. And that's the stone church with very thick walls. The walls are about 18 to 20, 24 inches thick. And so then the congregation dedicated that building in 1868. And then the farming commenced. The Veblen, the historic Veblen family, lived in the neighborhood, for example. Yep. And the Quee family founded... a farm just 2 miles east, for example. So it was a great place to farm. The congregation grew, kids, expanding families, and the congregation quickly outgrew the stone church and decided to build a new church in 1894, the Wood Church, sometimes called the Wood Clapboard Church. And then the stone church was used as a guild hall after that, up into the 20th century. So then, after World War II, farming changed, the size of farms changed, families shifted away, maybe smaller families, fewer people running the land. The congregation shrank slowly until the early 1970s when the congregation disbanded and some of the members joined a sister church in Nearstrand, Grace Lutheran Church, which still exists today. And then the stone and wood churches were sitting there on top of the hill, the beautiful hill that is the location for the churches the settlers picked really well. It's a very beautiful spot. But nobody was caring for the buildings anymore, and the congregation was gone. So then the fate of the two churches was up in the air. And retired artist from St. Olaf, John Mockestad.
John had
initiative to
grew up with their kids.
That's wonderful to learn those stories. Yep. And the Mockestad clan lived in the bought a farm many years ago now, probably 60 some years ago. I think they moved into the valley.
Yeah.
And the late John Mockestad passed away in 2012, but in the early 70s took initiative to work out a way to care for the buildings and the site. And a preservation society was formed. And rumor has it he bicycled all the way from Chelan, Lake Chelan, Washington, back to Northfield to take initiative in one summer in the early 1970s to help decide the fate of the churches. burning them, taking them down. There were both options at the time. But luckily for all of us,
yes,
they were preserved enough to be able to stay in place. Later, a preservation society, a nonprofit preservation society that was formed, now called the Valley Grove Preservation Society, VGPS. And that's the organization that I am a part of and have been for 20-plus years. And so the settlement history, the nature of the buildings, the historic features of the buildings themselves, the landscape, the setting, all have interesting stories to tell. And when I have guests of any kind, sometimes a car club comes out or the high school students that I worked with last spring for Arcadia, I just love exploring the history of the two sites in as much detail as they might want or can stand.
Yes. You know, walking around the cemetery can be so interesting. Well, of course, when I talk personally, because I have so many relatives buried there, but it's fascinating to walk around there and glean some of the stories just off of the stone.
Indeed, the historicity of the site is very rich in many, many ways. For example, when students were out last spring, one of the questions I had them investigate, I use kind of an investigative approaching in my teaching as a retired teacher. I'm fond of doing things like this. One of the questions I had the students investigate for an hour or two was the military history inferred by the stones and the marking on the stones and the little flags and the Grand Army of the Republic signatures and the little metal plaques. And so that was an example of a kind of history teaching lesson that's possible in that very interesting cemetery, plus the names. The family names, from the Stenbachens to the Lockrums to the Vesledals to the Quees, and it goes on.
Yeah.
And we, the Valley Grove Group, has taken advantage of two people in Northfield who love to tell cemetery stories. And the Country Social that's upcoming has Amy Pagel coming out and Ron Svet to tell cemetery stories based on the stones and family stories that they are able to collect. So, yes, the cemetery has lots of history.
Yes, it does. I'd be remiss if we didn't say something about the big oak tree in the southwest corner. Could you talk just a little bit about that?
Oh, I love that tree.
Folks,
yes, yes.
If you go out there, you've got to look at this tree.
You do. And it's one of my favorite things to do when I'm with a group or one or two individuals is to walk over to look at the big tree. And if we have enough people present, say three or four, then I will ask them to be tree huggers and see how many adults it takes with arms outstretched to reach around the circumference of the tree. It's about 3.5 adults.
Yeah, it is amazing.
17 or 18 feet in diameter or in circumference. And if you plug that number into an equation that is possible to find on the internet for aging oak trees of the appropriate type, comes out to be somewhere around 210 to 250 years old.
Wow.
So it is one very old tree. And I used to, when telling people about the tree, call it a big mama. But actually, that's a misnomer because oak trees have both male and female flowers. So to be fair, I must call it an it because it has both sexes present in the flowers. And this year is a good year to go out and look at the tree because it's producing acorns. The acorns have dropped in the last week or so, and there are hundreds, thousands of acorns on the ground.
Yeah, I'll have to go back out and pick some of those up. But it's interesting how you said referring to her as a she. Because I've heard other people, when they talk about that tree, her, she, not a tree. Her.
Well, I think all of us would have appreciation for mamas.
Yes.
For mothers. Yeah. In this case, the big mama as a metaphor for
the
tree.
My grandmother, she passed away in the 70s, and she was, I don't know if she was the last organist, but she was an organist at the church there.
Okay.
I remember her telling me a story that there was actually some services conducted under the tree before they built the stone church. Is that a myth or is that true?
Well, the best information I'm able to collect from the multiple sources that are available is that Pastor Moose, one of the first permanent pastors that came over from Norway and was assigned to help Valley Gulf Church and Holden and founded St. Olaf College. He must have been a busy guy and riding horseback all the time, I suppose. I mean, after all, that's how you got around. He is said to have baptized about 35 children under an oak tree in the neighborhood. Now, it could have been that big tree. It might have been a tree at the Severson's to the west, a mile. We aren't entirely sure, but it's a good story.
I prefer the story that that's the tree.
It might have been under the big tree.
Yeah. That's what I've told my kids.
It works.
So before we get into talking about the land restoration and stuff, a little bit more, just mm-hmm. real briefly. So the mission and the vision mm-hmm. For the Preservation Society.
Okay.
What's your elevator speech?
Well, I'm going to give you the simplified wording that we recently crafted to put into a brochure that's available in the little information kiosk that if you visit is at the corner of the Stone Church. And here's what we wrote. We preserve the Norwegian historic churches and Oak Savannah for the use, education, and enjoyment of everyone today. That's our crisp, simplified yes. version of what we think we're doing.
I like that. And you're a nonprofit organization.
Yeah, we are a nonprofit, a 501c3 registered in the state of Minnesota.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick commercial break and hear from our sponsor. When we come back, let's dive into where the vision for the Valley Grove Preservation Society turned into the land surrounding it and preserving that land also. So we will be right back.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in the home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market. Whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors, let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Welcome back. We've been talking with Gary Wagenbach, president of the Valley Grove Preservation Society, and you're listening to KYMN 95.1, The One, and 1080 AM. Gary, let's get right into talking about the acquired land, the land around the church. I love that piece of property. Make no secret about it. I love the walking trails. I like to go there during the week. I'm almost a little afraid to talk about this because I kind of have had it all to myself. But that originally wasn't part of the church. What, you know, maybe just kind of start out with what was that piece of property around the church?
Well, if you walk up into the cemetery and look to the south and to the east and to the west, you'll see the rolling hills and downslope toward the state park, which is nearby. And there now are prairie grasses and some oak trees out on that land. But 20 years ago, the area that you're looking at now, totals about 113 acres, and were farm fields. It's corn and soybeans, beautiful soil, and we could almost eat it for breakfast. I mean, I tell people that when I do a little soils talk when I'm out there. It's such beautiful, soft,
I think that's what you were doing
soil.
One day last year when I was out there. I saw you bent over looking at the soil and stuff. At first, is this guy okay?
Well, I've never actually tried it on my cereal, but okay. I like to tease people about how beautiful the soil is. So corn and soybeans for many, many years. And then it's a very erodible soil on steep hills. Just keep that in mind. And then in the year 2000, the grandchildren of the owner, immediately to the west, the next farmstead to the west, decided to sell the land because they had inherited the land and just wanted to dispose of it. They weren't going to live at that location or use the land. So then a for sale sign went up down by the road, just to the west of the Valley Grove Church. And people that live in the neighborhood were taken aback, wondering what might happen next. And then we who live in the neighborhood, and I have lived in the neighborhood for 30 years, as have a number of other people that help care for the place, the Halversons and Peter McKinnon and the Rattlers and Doug Jones and a number of other people. We wondered, okay, what's next for sale? What does that mean? And we quick had a meeting up at Valley Grove Churches and kind of threw up our hands, you know, what's next, what's next? And the end result was that there was a hat passed around, and several $1,000 checks ended up in this cap that evening. We sent our treasurer the next Monday morning to the realtor in Faribault to attempt to purchase the 113 acres. And we got in the door early, sent our treasurer, Ken Celine, to the office, and put $3,000 down on the purchase of 113 acres. Purchase price was $414,000. And then we came back and thought, what did we do? Are we crazy? Whoa. Well, long story shorter, 6 months later, we had $414,000 in hand. And on January 3rd or so, whenever the office in Faribault opened in, would it be January of 2001, we walked in with a check for the total price.
And why was it so important to get the land? What was the concerns? Was there a concern that it wouldn't be stay as farmland, that it would be a development, or?
Well, mixed answers to the question. Some of the locals thought it should stay as farmland.
Okay.
And then those of us connected to the Valley Grove Care through the board and the cemetery association as well, I would imagine, had heard the rumor that a developer was next in line to buy the land and build houses out there. It was a time when housing was in rural areas was being actively built.
Booming.
And so we thought, okay, look, we have to take action somehow and control the land because it's next to the historic places of the churches. And the end result was that we ended up owning the land, Valley Grove Preservation Society owning 50, and through a right of first refusal covenant with neighbor Peter McKinnon, the total 113 is under the control then of the Preservation Society plus Peter McKinnon. And in the course of the conversation about buying the land, there was the obvious question, well, if we own land, what are we going to do with it? And the idea of a restoration project came up.
So you weren't planning on putting up big condos or anything?
We weren't. The collection of folks in the group think a little differently than that.
Yes.
They're more land care oriented, and some of us are sort of restoration, plant restoration, native plant restoration oriented. And the net result was that Peter McKinnon and the Valley Grove Board decided that a prairie plus oak trees was what we could plant on the land. And we decided on oaks to complement native grasses because, thank you to the citizens of the U.S. and the citizens of the state of Minnesota and you two sitting right here, you all are owners of the development rights on the land. That is, we sold the development rights to the through the Federal Forest Legacy Program to the state of Minnesota as a conservation easement.
Oh, okay.
Now, that's worth $128,000, it turns out. That really helped our budget.
That helped out.
So one of the requirements in working with the DNR and the U.S. Forestry Service through the DNR Forestry Office in Faribault, then how we manage the land is guided by a conservation plan agreement that we have with DNR Forestry, which includes putting in native grasses and putting in a certain number of trees, especially native oak trees. And so the label for the land that you'll see on the website and that I would use in talking about it would be oak savanna, which means a combination of oak trees and grasslands. Savanna is kind of a French word, I guess, referring to grasslands with trees in it.
Now, in So when you guys decided to move forward with preserving the land, how long of a process from start to finish? And I don't mean until the trees were mature, but I mean, do you start by burning? Do you plow? How did you start the process?
Well, that's a very practical question, one that we had to confront. And when doing prairie restoration, planting native prairie grasses, which the process would be labeled prairie restoration plantings, the easiest way to start would be to, if the land has been farmed, wait until the end of soybean planting. Soybeans after harvested leave relatively little debris on the soil, and the way soybeans are managed, the soil is fairly clean and clear of weedy plants. So then after the soybeans are harvested, fall planting or spring planting the next spring.
Are they, are they doing that over by the state park this year on some of the land that they have had there where the dairy farm was?
They may well. That would be.
It looks like it's in soybeans, and I thought that was really strange. What they're doing.
If they're going to plant, that would be the ideal combination because you have fewer weeds to deal with. Are your nemesis in the challenge in prairie restoration plantings. So after ag use, I think soybeans was the last crop on the land. Then we hired some experts, Prairie Restorations Inc., base offices in Princeton, Minnesota, and we worked out a contract with that company because they have technical know-how, they have seed sources, they have equipment, they have planting machines, they have
the
tractors.
And who was the company again?
Prairie Restorations Inc.
So this is their business,
That's their business. They have Ron Bowen is the owner and president, and over the last 40-plus years, the company has developed an excellent reputation for being able to handle native grasses and native wildflowers, collecting seed, helping landowners plant whatever combination they desire at their in the city site, in-town site, or out in the country like the Valley Grove site. So we put in about 15 or 20 native grasses that they helped locate, and then I think about $25,000 or $27,000 worth of seed that included a lot of wildflower seed as well, about 30 different species.
I've noticed that in the spring and in the summer how beautiful it is out there.
Yeah, the beauty you're seeing is as a result of a concerted effort.
So it just didn't happen.
It didn't happen by itself. And so I remember sitting around as part of the planning team at Peter McKinnon's kitchen table and looking at our budget that we had for seed, which was $20,000 plus, about 25 grand as I recall, and trying to decide how much seed we could buy and afford to buy and where we would put it. So we purchased enough grass seed of the 15 or so species to cover the entire 113 acres. And then 20 grand worth of flower seed, something on that range, and put the majority of the flower seed where people could see the plants once they bloomed, where it grew up and bloomed. So on the crest of the ridge, west of Valley Grove Churches, to the east around a ways where we now have trails, and west over toward where Peter McKinnon lives is where we put the majority of the wildflower seed, as much as we could afford.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you keep out some of the invasive plants and stuff? I've noticed where you've it's been a number of years ago, looks like you did some burning out there. Is that how you keep that out, or is there concerns about?
Yeah, ongoing management for restoration of this type includes doing managed burns. As the prairie lands around this area, and historically south of here and all the way to Denver, I'm fond of saying you could have started walking from Valley Grove, walked south toward Faribault, and you'd have to hop across the Minnesota River, eventually down by Mankato and so on, but you could walk in grasslands all the way to Denver from Nerstrand because of the extensive history of native grasslands in the area. And the grasslands were present historically, where the buffalo lived and so on. And I think bison, buffalo or bison, lived right in this immediate area in the deeper history of in the 19th and 18th century. The grasslands are there because of fires. Fires suppress woody trees. And so now as a management tool, we do prescribe burns or manage burns, alternate phrase, on a 3 to 5 year rotation. So 3 years ago, we burned about 5 acres, for example, to the north side of the plot, and then 2 years ago, another 10 upslope a ways. And this last year, we tried to burn, but weather didn't permit. Yeah. So 2019, we'll be out there with the burn team again, adding another 5 or 10 acres in a kind of a patchwork quilt sort of burn. And the burning process promotes the native plants and suppresses the woody.
Okay. Now, I see you've taken out some of the old trees that were kind of in a line along the driveway into there. And I, from what I understand, talking to, I'll call them old timers, you know, there was actually kind of a, I don't want to say a barn, but a place all along there for them to tie their horses up and stuff. Is that correct? And those trees were just really shouldn't be there?
Well, yes. Yeah, I agree with your
okay.
the picture that you're painting there. And the trees, we took out, 3 years ago now? With some help from Bakken Excavating, and the trees that were present were second growth, shall we say.
Yeah.
Ash, buckthorn, Siberian elm, cottonwood,
yeah.
Box elder, and so we call them weedy trees.
Yes.
all but the Siberian elm are natives, but still, I mean, they're all wind-delivered, and if you have a piece of land that's untended and not managed, then these trees will come in from windborne seeds. So that was the patch we had. And so we removed them, and we're going to put in native grasses
okay.
going forward in time. We hope to plant yet this October or November. And the view is to the west is beautiful now, I think.
It's much
rendering
nicer.
An opinion here.
No, I would
and
agree with you.
Historic. And going forward, we're going to have low-stature plants in that location so as to keep the view that we think represented the historic view. Now, the horse shed idea, yes, we have.
I mean, was there?
Yes, and it was located near the present location of the little outdoor toilet that we have there, porta-potty that you can see if you drive in and park. And our evidence comes from Al Cui, who's now 95 years old, soon to be 95 years old, in mid-September, whom we interviewed 2 years ago in considerable detail. We had a team come up and listen to his stories about the churches, and especially we asked him about horses, or coming by horse, because he has memory of pre-automobile stories of people coming to church using horses. So, especially when it's cold, what do you do with the horses? You've been using them, riding them, or either riding or walking them to church, and they're sweaty. And sweaty horses on a cold day is a bad combination if you're not continuing to work the horse. So, an elongate shed that could have pull-in tie-ups for horses was on that location.
It was
maybe 15 or 20 feet deep, and perhaps 75, 100 feet long, maybe 60 to 80 feet long. Okay. And so multiple horses could be tied up and then cared for during the service.
Now, you've got this beautiful piece of land out there. Why did you put walking trails in?
Mm.
Why do you want people out there?
Interesting question.
No, I'm going to thank you for doing that because I use those, but I'm just curious what the thought process was, of going into, okay, we've done all this work, now we're going to have people come walking out here.
Well, we might go back to our vision statement. We preserve the Norwegian historic churches and Oak Savannah for the use, education, and enjoyment of everyone today.
Okay.
So to appreciate the churches, all you have to do is walk in, and once they're open, I have the key, talk to me, I can open them up for you and give you the stories. And on Country Social Day, we'll have the churches open. But given the land project that we are focusing on today, A lot of people interact with that amazing restoration. Well, you can look at it if you stand up in the cemetery, but more importantly, there's an opportunity to engage, to walk, to look, to photograph the flowers. The bird-oriented people in Rice County Bird Club love to come out here.
Yes.
And Jerry Hoekstra is one of the champion birders, Gene Bauer, Northfield. They highly value this site for birds. And anybody interested in plants can walk and look. People interested in the state park visitors are informed by the park personnel that you can come around to the north side of the area, north of the park, because Valley Grove is north of the park, and stop and walk the trails and get close to the state park. Or an adventurous walker can go into the state park from the north side, starting from Valley Grove site.
So eventually there will be a trail hookup there.
Well, that is a hand-waving thought, and I teased the park director a little bit. Katie Fauché is the new park director.
Yes.
And we had a little mini-conference here a few weeks ago that she was at that involved a group of interested assets, that is community members, talking about the needs and the value of Valley Grove and looking at going forward. I teased her a little bit by saying, well, I could go into the state park from the north side by walking from Valley Grove downslope, and eventually I'd find a trail in the park. And so it's a possibility, although the terrain is kind of rough, and it's not wouldn't be an easy place to have a trail. So I doubt that she would jump on the idea of having a trail.
Andy, have you been out there and walked the Valley Grove trails at all?
I never have. No, I want to get on and check it out.
And it's interesting in the fact that I'll go in the spring and see all these wildflowers. You go in the summer, it'll be different. Mm-hmm. Go in the fall, it's the foliage has just completely changed. I see something different all the time. So, Gary, we're getting real close to being out of time, but a little bit more about the walking trails. What kind of distances are there? Mm-hmm. Describe it just a little bit. And does it cost anything to go out there? Do you encourage people to go out there? What are the concerns with having people while they're out there?
Well, we do encourage people to come and visit. And the trails that we have on the Oak Savannah Restoration land extend from the margin of the cemetery, both on the east side and on the southwest corner of the grounds.
Yep.
And this must be in the order of a mile plus.
It seems more than that when you're wandering around.
There's multiple branches and so on. So it's maybe between 1 to 2 miles. And if you walk way to the western boundary of the Prairie Restoration, that's and back.
It's very easy to spend several hours.
Mile and a half, probably. Yeah. And so we encourage visitors, even though it's private property, and with discretion, no motorized vehicles out on the trails. We've had very little problem with that sort of issue. We have some posting, no motorized vehicles, and dogs on a leash only in the cemetery grounds. So visitors who have dogs will walk them on the trails and let them go off leash. And so for the moment anyway, dogs are able to be off leash. And for wildlife purposes, there's a little bit of an issue there if you stop and think about it. But I think it's about connecting people to the land, the place, and the history, and we value developing those connections. So we on the Valley Grove board think positively about encouraging people to come and visit and use the trails.
Are there any new projects on the horizon?
Yes, there are. We are working with the DN with regard to the land itself. We closely collaborate with DNR Forestry to every 10 years review and kind of renew what would be labeled as a conservation plan for the site. And that involves tree counts, assessment of how the oak trees are doing, because we value the native bur oak as a fire-resistant tree on the landscape. And so that effort is in process. Working with Carleton students who GIS locate, GPS locate trees for us and have helped make a map through the one of the labs at Carleton in relation to the DNR forestry project. Ooh, so we have this little technical thing going. Then continuing management of invasives. We work hard at removing sweet clover, bird's foot trefoil. The invasive parsnip that you see along the roadside is creeping in a little bit along the north side. So we're diligent about removing that. And cottonwood trees, as well as Siberian elm. We have techniques for cutting and adding an herbicide to the stump to suppress the invasives. So a volunteer team of about six is required, and I coordinate the volunteers each year during the growing season, starting in June through now, in the end of August. And I've trained them up watching for invasives, and then we get people out on the land and remove them.
If people want to get involved or donate, are there different ways to donate money and items? And are there different ways to get involved?
There are. And if you give out my contact information, I'm happy to help with that part. But our website also gives contact information, and our treasurer, Ken Saline, can guide people in detail, in more detail than just sending a direct donation. But we appreciate direct donations. Okay. We have a donation service that is web-based. People could send in, you know, monthly donations, which we'd greatly appreciate, or bequests, or stock. I mean, we have an endowment arrangement. So there are many ways to help.
Did you also have at one time where a person could buy a oak tree to be planted?
Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me. We do have a
tree. Is that still available?
Yeah, yes, it is. Yeah, to honor someone or to memorialize someone in your family. And that information is on our website.
What a great idea.
Yeah, definitely.
For that.
And do you guys have any events coming up?
We do. Our big one, one of the biggest ones of the year, is called Our Country Social, and that's coming up on September 16th. 1 to 4 p.m., and rain or shine, and we hope for good weather.
Yes.
And when the weather is good, we maybe have 200 or 300 people show up. When it's misty or a little bit wet, then attendance can drop, of course. But we would love to have folks come out and check out the activities in the afternoon. We have music by Hootenanny and a historic church's presentation by a historian named Doug Oman, who's looked at about 3,000 different historic sites in the Midwest. This guy is amazing. A Krumkaka demonstration.
Ah, okay.
You don't reach
it. I'm hooked.
Would recommend.
Yep.
Accordion, music, old-time family pleasures like horse-drawn wagon rides. Bob Matthews from Faribault brings his Percheron horses. Mm. All those beautiful black Percherons.
Yes.
Man,
yeah.
They are the most gorgeous horses I can imagine. And so then coffee and cake to die for, of course. Okay. As much coffee as you drink till the pot runs dry. So come, and then there's a donation pot available next to where the cakes are located.
That's a good
in
place
the Stone Church.
You know, Andy, the other thing that we always do every year is hit the Christmas Eve service.
Yep.
That
Yes, indeed.
That's a must.
That's
on your list.
The next big one coming up.
Yeah.
And so
the word on that
Christmas
has really
Eve.
Gotten out. I mean, you got to get there a little early.
Well, point taken. I usually help with the service. I sometimes am the bell ringer guy, and or I help ushering people in. And last year it was packed to the rafters. Might be a phrase that you would use. I was up in the balcony doing the bell ringing, and the balcony was full, and the lower part of the sanctuary was also full. So yes, do come early, and even if it's snowing, we'll figure out a way to plow the driveway. So do come.
Well, I've said it a couple of times, but I'm going to repeat it. We've got this little gem, the two Valley Grove churches out there with these wonderful walking trails. It's so close to Northfield. I would encourage anybody to go out there and take those trails, walk those. You will be amazed of the beauty you'll see. out there. Well, you guys have.
Thank you for that encouragement, Dave. I still meet people who haven't been out there, people who've lived in the area for a long time. And then I'll, of course, encourage them to come out or talk to them if they're there, if they somehow get out there. But yes, there are local folks.
Yeah. It's a special treat.
Still haven't been out there.
It's a special treat.
All right. Well, we'd like to thank you, Gary, for all of the history and interesting information on the Valley Grove Preservation for Society. But we do still have time for more facts. We have time for Dave's Interesting Facts.
Gary, this is where I try to stump Andy a little bit, but okay. You can play along with this one also.
We'll see how this goes.
Well, as most as people have heard, where the Valley Grove churches are and Valley Grove walking trails are, it's near a little town called Nerstrand. So we have a little trivia on Nerstrand.
All right.
There was a Norwegian immigrant that actually moved to Wheeling Township and homesteaded at the present site of in Nerstrand, building a house and a farm. Why don't you give me the name of the guy and what year that was?
It was 18.
Well, you're
I'm on the right track.
Right track.
I'm going to go with 18-6-5-4.
How about you, Gary?
49.
I'd say when the railroad.
You're wrong, by the way, Andy.
Railroad. There was an attempt to put a railroad through a line through to Nerstrand, and my guess would be that would have been late 1860s, maybe about 1870.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was before the railroad went in that he homesteaded.
Okay.
It's 1856. Any idea on the name of the guy?
No.
Osmond Amundsen.
Osmond. Yes.
Yep, you probably knew that.
I've heard the name.
Okay, well, what he actually then decided to build a store right on the right-of-way of the railroad tracks. Do you know what year that was? Now, if you paid attention to what Gary was saying here, you're going to be real close.
1871.
No, you're wrong.
Okay.
Gary, you want to take it?
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't know. So the railroads, here's my line of reasoning. During the Civil War, railroads were a big deal, and railroad lines were rapidly being built wherever possible. So I'm guessing, you know, later 1860s, about 1868.
No, you were kind of referring to it in 1870. It was 1877.
1877,
yeah.
Okay.
So that gets to when the railroad came through, which two railroads were they, and what year were they built in Nerstrand? And this was, give you a little hint, it was extending the line from Lyle, Minnesota to St. Paul. And that's when Osmundsen actually plotted the town line and naming it after a town in Norway. So there's two questions. What year was that?
I was going to say, where's the question, Dave?
What year was that, and what town in Norway did he name it after?
That was 1874.
No.
And he named it after Lilyhammer.
Nope.
Okay.
So Andy is really wrong.
Boy, you know, I don't know. The Nerstrand name is pretty unusual in my perception. I've never really anchored it anywhere. So I cast a base on Norwegian connection, I guess.
Yes.
But I'm lost.
Okay. Well, this one surprised me. The railroad didn't come through the 1885.
Oh, okay. In there. Okay.
And he named it after his hometown of Nedstrand in Tyresand, Norway.
Okay, I learned something new.
One simple last one. What year was the town incorporated, Nerstrand?
1888.
No, you're wrong.
I have no idea.
A little higher.
Oh, we're going to go up a ways. Maybe 1890-something, 1895?
Yes! Oh, 1897. But I'm going to give it to you because you were within 2 years.
Okay, here we go.
There we go. That's today's interesting facts about Nerstrand.
All right. Well, Dave, once again, your facts are interesting. We'd like to remind you to tune in next Saturday to On Tap with Corey and Ira. Find everything about local beer. As always, the show will be archived on kymnradio.net and found under Northfield Outdoors. Thank you to Hayes for updating the Northfield Outdoors Facebook page. and to Professional Pride Realty for sponsoring Northfield Outdoors. And Dave, as always, until next time,
get out there and enjoy the great outdoors.
This has been Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. Join Dave and Andy every other Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on 95 The One or streaming at kymnradio.net.